morning. Welcome to Matinee on Air. Jay Matinee, Greg Buck, Galvin, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the show. Call or text 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or former Twitter. Very excited, 11:33, our friend and colleague Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, is going to be joining us. We're going to talk, among other things, about the Wisconsin, the Cheese Championships, which are underway in Madison. I know that there's an opportunity for the public to stop by one of the days, I think tomorrow and Thursday. Pam will have made more details for us about that if you're in the Madison area and you want to check that out. Next year, we'll be there.
We better.
Next year will be at Cheese Championships. All right, we're going to switch gears and move along. I saw this quote from Robert Reich yesterday, and he's an American professor. He's an author. He's a lawyer. He's a political commentator. He worked in the numerous presidential administrations, including under Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton. He was also a member of President Obama's Economic Transition Advisory Board. And he posted this on Twitter yesterday. The five richest men on the planet, as of today, hold a combined $950 billion in wealth. If each of them were to spend $1 million daily, it would take them 476 years to exhaust their fortunes. Don't tell me they can't afford a wealth tax.
Yeah.
That's from Robert Reich. Again, economist, author, lawyer, professor, pretty knowledgeable guy. This comes on the same day as Jeff Bezos took back his number one spot as the world's richest man yesterday, dethroning Elon Musk, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. Jeff Bezos' net worth now stands at $200 billion over Elmo's $198 billion. Elon hasn't been such a good businessman lately. He's seen his wealth fall by more than $30 billion as Tesla's share price has gone down 25% in recent months.
And I am looking it up as we're talking about it. As far as I know, Elon is getting sued by former employees at Twitter for, like, I think $128 million. $128 million there. In severance pay.
Yeah. He owed this money to these people when he let them, when he cut them loose from Twitter, and now he's not paying them their money.
What is it with rich guys and just
not wanting to pay
the
bills?
Not paying the bill. $128 million. Well, granted, the reason why Elon and Jeff and all these guys go back and forth all the time is because they're not actually rich. Their money is tied up in stock, which says they are rich, but if that stock goes down, well, then they're less rich. That's why Jeff is now the richest guy in the world, or America, or who cares. But that's the thing, is I don't know if you know this, but Elon Musk did not buy Twitter with his money. He used his Tesla shares as collateral to get other people to invest their money to pay for it. So he can use money that doesn't exist, because tomorrow, Tesla could fall apart tomorrow.
Yes.
And those shares would be worth nothing. And he'd have no money. But he was allowed to use that fake money to get other people to buy this thing that he has systematically ruined and now is on the hook for $128 million if he goes to court, which I'm sure he'll settle for half.
Probably.
But that's the craziness of these billionaires, is that once you get to that point, you could just... It's not even a matter of I get to do whatever I want. I mean, that's once you reach a certain point of wealth, you can do whatever you want.
Pretty much.
But this billionaire status, especially in the face of you're not even looking at a pile of money. You're looking at ones and zeros that just say, for now, you're worth $100 billion, Jane, right now. But tomorrow, nothing.
Could be nothing. BloombergTax.com. As of yesterday, IRS collection notice reboot starts with the richest scofflaws. I looked it up. Scofflaw. Because it's just not a word that gets tossed around a lot. And I like words a lot.
Yeah.
Scofflaw is a person who flouts the law, especially by failing to comply with a law that is difficult to enforce effectively.
I feel like as you read that, old timey piano music should have been playing. Hey, he's a scofflaw.
I think calling them scofflaws is a really nice way of saying you're a cheater.
Yeah.
You cheat.
You're underhanded. You are.
Yes. You're cheating the system and you're cheating the rest of us.
Yeah.
The IRS's newest campaign going after rich taxpayers who haven't been filing returns is being hailed as a sign the IRS is finally getting back on track after years of underfunding and the inability to chase people down who owe money on their taxes. IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel said this week there's a new plan. Thousands of letters to high earners who haven't filed their taxes are going out. Their efforts to use the 2022 tax and climate law funding to target wealthy people to close the tax gap, or the difference between tax money paid and tax money owed.
And they've been collecting for a little while now.
They have. And it's working. It's turning out to be quite a good investment.
Yes, and it is making people angry. We have had people call this show, who, by the way, I do not assume are rich, saying this is a bad idea.
They're not coming after you and me.
No.
And we're not on that level.
No.
We're not on that level. If you are, good for you. But I would assume you pay your taxes.
Yeah, if you're paying your taxes and everything is right, you're good to go. If there's a mistake, the government's going to work with you to take care of it. But if you are someone and you're not rich and you're not paying your taxes, I feel as sorry for you as I do these billionaires. If you are skirting the system that me and Jane and Calvin and everyone else that I know goes into, we pay our fair share.
That's right.
Because we have to.
Nobody likes it.
Nobody likes it. I'd like a little more back. I'd love a little more back, but that's not the case. So I pay my tax.
855-75-CIVIC. If you'd like to join the conversation, Karina from Milwaukee. Good morning, Karina. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. You know what? I read an interesting statistic. Elon Musk has or estimated wealth is $210 billion. Now, the population of the world is 7 billion. The population of America is 330 million. How is it right? How does it make sense?
For one person.
I want to give you that number.
Yeah. Yeah. For one person to have to accumulate that much wealth, it's. Thank you, Karina, and thank you always for listening. Appreciate it. According to this article, again, in BloombergTax.com, there are about 125,000 cases of non-filers who made over $400,000 between 2017 and 2021. The IRS does expect to get hundreds of millions of dollars in money owed. Letters to the non-filers are going out this week. So you'll find out. You'll know if it's you.
If you put your ear to the wind and you can hear the whining of rich people everywhere going, what? My guy said I'd be fine.
Yeah, no.
No.
No. You have to pay.
Yeah, you don't get to not pay. You don't want to pay. Let's take away all of the services you get because of tax money.
No more public roads.
Nope.
No more. You know, water systems.
Nope.
You don't sewer get sewer systems.
If you have public, if your municipality has a public trash system, well, you gotta take the trash out on your own.
That's right. Or get a burn barrel.
Yep.
Go get a burn barrel.
It just doesn't, you know, like you were saying, these taxes, this money that they would have to pay in taxes are just a sliver
yep.
of what they have. And Karina asks a very fine question. And why are we a society that, you know, it's one thing, it's successful. All right, you're worth $10 million, $20, $30 million. I get it. But why should one person be worth $280 billion or $30 billion? And one more cherry on that, he's not worth that much. The stock says it's worth.
Right.
If he shows me a room, $230 billion of cash, I'd be like, congratulations, you were rich.
Well, and what's really irritating about this, according to this article, tax experts expect people self-employed could account for the bulk of these non-filers. They may be people who say they were too busy or faced a life event that prevented them from filing. This guy says, Eric Green, a partner at taxpayer firm Green and Sklar's LLC, says, we have people who come in and haven't filed in 10 years and shrug their shoulders and say, I was busy. Look, I was busy?
It takes a long time to watch Game of Thrones. That show was on for a very long time.
Come on.
And I just really need people to understand that I take it day by day. So every day the show is happening, I treat it as a day. So I'd watch it for 10 years. And I don't have time for your piddly taxes.
I'm just disappointed that they don't come up with more creative excuses than I was busy.
What I don't understand.
I'd rather hear something like, my rare pet ocelot ate my tax returns.
My rare pet ocelot ate my other rare pet ocelot.
Ocelot, and it was very disturbing, and I couldn't get anything done because my private animal zoo was all a fluffer. It's come on, folks. If you're going to cheat, at least put a little effort into it.
Or just be honest. I didn't want to.
I would respect that. I would respect that more than I was busy.
We got a text from the 920. The average Joes that are upset about increased funding for the IRS are likely the same people that still believe in trickle-down economics and that billionaire class will do the right things. Can I get a Jane laugh? There we go.
Nice try. We'll keep this going. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the former Twitter. If you have any more creative suggestions on how people can explain why they didn't pay their taxes for 10 years, I would love to hear them. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
And she starts to cry. She takes a swing, man. She can't hurt. She don't mean no harm. She just don't know what else to do about it.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Kelpie, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. We were talking about the IRS getting additional funding to go after scofflaws. People who cheat on their taxes.
Hey, your tax cheats, huh? Your scofflaws, your ne'er-do-wells, yeah.
Robert Reich says the five richest men on the planet right now hold a combined $950 billion in wealth as of today. And if each of them spent $1 million every day, it would still take them 476 years to exhaust their fortunes. I think they're going to be okay.
They'll be fine. You know what? If they exhausted their fortune down to $1 million, they'd be fine.
Andrew in Maine says speeders could be considered scofflaws. Yes, speed enforcement happens, but how effective is it? Would you say more or less than 5% of speeders are ever ticketed? That's a good point. I just don't like the term scofflaws for tax cheats. I think that it lightens the. It's too nice of a word.
Scofflaws?
Yes, they're cheaters. We should call
them criminals.
That too.
How about that? Scofflaws like guys like, it's like, oh, this guy's a drunkard. He's kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, scofflaws is not serious enough. Andrew also says, my rare pet ocelot was doing the taxes, but got in with a crowd of bad flamingos and ran away. It happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's one where the IRS will be like, oh, yeah, all penalties waived. They'll be fine with that. I mean, we've all been there, right?
If you want to check in on this, again, I'm delighted that the IRS has extra funding. I am delighted that the IRS is going to be going after people who haven't paid their taxes in 10 years because they were busy.
And anyone listening right now who might be saying, oh my gosh, they're going to come after me. I want you to stop for a moment, take a breath, have some water. Then ask yourself, have I been paying my taxes every year since I've had to pay taxes? If the answer is yes, you're good.
You should be good.
You're great.
Yeah, now, you should be good.
If the IRS knocks on your door and says, I'm taking an extra 30% because I can, they don't work for the IRS.
Yeah.
They're just some guy.
You would want to follow up on that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
before you do that.
Yeah.
Jesse from Madison is on the line. Good morning, Jesse. Thank you so much for joining us. What did you want to say?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I think a better word than scofflaw is deadbeat. I always get reminded of this analogy whenever, you know, folks who are typically are libertarians say taxes are theft. It's just kind of like back in college when you had that roommate who said, I don't want to chip in for the internet bill because I never use it. But you see them on the Wi-Fi, on their phone all the time.
Yep.
Of course they are. The other thing I'd like to say is that there is no reason, like if I file my taxes incorrectly, like last year paid someone to do it and there was a minor mix-up and the IRS actually gave me money back more. Well, how do they know? If the IRS knows exactly how much money you owe them, why don't they just send everybody a pre-filed tax form? And if there's discrepancies or some kind of declaration you need to make on top of that, do that. Save everyone enough time. Actually recoup more money from people who owe it. Elizabeth Warren actually had a really great proposal about this, but, you know, H&R Block and that whole industry lobbied against it and killed it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, good heavens, Jesse, they've been talking about the IRS setting up its own tax prep service so people didn't have to go to places like that. And, of course, that didn't go anywhere because, like you just said, the tax prep people want to keep making money.
Think about how much time and hair pulling you spend every year filing and putting everything together, and think if the IRS just sent you a thing, if you found something wrong on it, fine, correct it. Otherwise, one click and you're done. Go back to your life.
Yeah, it would be great. But again, that would unfortunately, I'm guessing, make it easier for some people to cheat if the IRS is the one coming with a form to you saying, this is your stuff. It's going to make it tougher for people to cheat, and they don't want it to be more difficult.
I do not pull my hair out. I pay another person to pull their hair out to do my taxes. And us Americans, and by the way, really quick, Elizabeth Warren has taken up that fight again. I've seen videos of her, long videos talking about the need for a federally based system of doing taxes where they do the work, they send out the sheet, we do what we need to do, and it's done. File this under another thing that Europeans laugh at us when they find out what we have to go through for our taxes every year. Meanwhile, someone like you just said would be like, I didn't pay for 10 years. Why? Yeah. Who cares?
Right. Yeah. It's very, very annoying. It is. It's really irritating. And nobody likes it. Nobody likes to pay taxes. None of us want to pay taxes.
No.
Most of us do.
Yeah.
And don't cheat.
Nope. And I pay someone a lot of money to not only
do
my taxes, but to make sure that if there is a problem, they're going to cover it. So they have every incentive to do it correctly the first time around.
That's a really good point.
And now I'm starting to get anxiety because we haven't filed our taxes yet.
Neither have I.
Oh.
We got a couple of weeks. 855-75-CIVIC. Ken from Madison joins us on the line. Good morning, Ken. Thanks for joining the show.
Hello. I have a few things to say about this. One is that I think you'll find some of these people are not tax dodgers in the sense that they're being made out to be. But, for example, I just drove down John Nolan Drive here in Madison, which overlooks the lake, and there's a building on there that was owned by a woman here who owned 10 properties in town in the city of Madison, foreclosed on all 10 of them, worth millions and millions of dollars. including her house, and they took them all away because she was no longer capable of handling her own finances and her own taxes. There was nobody helping her out. She ended up living in her truck in that parking lot until she got help. And I think there's probably, you'll find a lot of people that haven't filed their taxes that are just elderly and don't have the people to help them do it.
Well, you bring up
that's part of it.
Thank you, Ken. You bring up something I had genuinely not thought of.
Well, and
you really did.
And that's the thing, though, is we're not, you know, when we talk about these stories that have been happening over the past 6 months or so, we're talking about people who are purposely, who have evaded, who are tax cheats. There are, of course, situations where people, you know,
I can see where that would happen with elderly people. And if they don't have family and they don't have anyone close and things get away from you. But
yeah.
But still, you would have thought that at some point the IRS would have reached out to this woman and given her some assistance.
I don't think they just walked in and said, this is all ours. There had to have been attempts.
And the other thing, too, let's not forget, is this funding was just restored to the IRS.
Yeah.
This is only under the Biden administration.
Yep.
If I remember this correctly. So, all right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. When we return, we have news coming up next. A great entertainment minute with Pete Schwabba.
That's hard to say. Entertainment minute with Pete Schwabba, who hosts Nightlight on Civic Media.
Look how easily you said
that. Like a rapper.
And then Pam Yonke will be with us, the Famulous Farm Babe. So stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Shane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Surgeon of Sound, Calvin on the board. What was that song?
That was Nirvana.
Nirvana sang about cheese.
It's called Big Cheese. It's apparently about his record label pressuring him while they were recording the first album.
Whatever. It fit in perfectly. Big Cheese. We are joined by our friend and colleague, the Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. Is here. Good morning, Pam. How are you doing?
Hello, all. Thanks for that inspiration. I knew it wasn't necessarily referencing what I'm going to be talking about, but still appreciate the effort.
Any song with cheese that we can work in, we're gonna use it, Pam. We're gonna use it. We're gonna talk about a lot of different things, but I did want to start with the World Championship Cheese Contest is going on in Madison, and Greg and I are determined to be there next year. And I'm sure you've got connections to get us there.
We can make that happen. Yeah. They love to have people come in. I mean, right now, the event started at about 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, probably for the judges, 10 o'clock for the general public. So from 10 until 3 today and tomorrow, people are welcome to come in. No tickets, no charge.
Oh, no kidding.
You take it in with your eyes visually. If the judges aren't busy, they encourage you to, you know, ask questions if you've got them. And then the best part is when they start bringing out the samples. Now, that is a little dicey for me because you've got literally cheese and dairy products from around the world, and you're going to get what they decide the samples are going to be. It's not like it's all going to be, you know, a certain. So your palate might get an education in a dilly of a hurry on what you do and don't like from halfway around the world, but it's still pretty cool.
Oh, that sounds great. And what a great opportunity, again, to check out some things that would normally not be on your grocery list. How else do we get exposed to new things?
And every one of them over there is going to have a story, I can almost guarantee. I mean, this is one of the reasons I really love my job, is going to this as a quote assignment for the day and working up before that on all the behind the scenes stuff nobody ever stops to think about. How do you get 3,300 different dairy entries into the United States, into Wisconsin, in a timely fashion. Remember, folks, this is a perishable good. Mm-hmm. It's got to be kept in the proper temperature. It's got to be handled properly. And that means a lot of expense for the cheesemakers to guarantee all those things. Then it gets to Wisconsin. Now we've got to do due diligence and make sure we've got enough people to take care of it, manage it, get it from Little Chute, where they stage it. That's where the warehouse, where they can handle that volume of product.
Oh.
Three semi-loads from Little Chute to Madison, probably yesterday. Yep, I'm going to guess they were finishing it up yesterday to get it into Monona Terrace, get it staged up in where it's got to be, what class, and that kind of stuff. And then Becky bar the doors, here we go today.
That's crazy.
And you said it's from all over the world, Pam, right?
Yep. This is the world. Yeah.
We're not even talking about the government getting involved with their own strict necessities of inspection and customs and all those things. So you've got to be a patient person if you want to put your cheese in competition.
I've gotten a bunch of emails from people that said, hey, wait a minute, I couldn't carry a piece of cheese on the plane coming from one country to the next without the Beagle Brigade busting me. How can they do this? And I said it is a very calculated process. The cheesemakers, wherever they are in the world, literally have to set up appointments with customs, have to set up appointments with food inspections, have to get all the proper paperwork, have to coordinate that with transportation. And remember, it's not coming just, you know, with your luggage. It's coming refrigerated.
Yeah. Right?
So that's more expensive, premium place. Then when it lands, it comes refrigerated or by expedited courier from the airport to the warehouse, which is climate controlled. They know what to do with it up there and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the part that I thought was kind of funky is I was talking with John Umhafer, who is just a righteous dude. He is the executive director of the Wisconsin Cheesemakers. And every time, it makes me have enough. Every time him and I talk, we get the giggles because neither one of us can believe we've got this for a job. He gets to talk about cheeses from around the world, and I get to interview him talking about cheeses from around the world.
I want that job.
I said to him, I'm like, dude, how's it going this year with volunteers? He said they have more volunteers than they need.
Mm.
Same thing with judges. They have, I'd have to look at my notes, but they've got somewhere in the neighborhood of, I want to say, it's got to be more than 53 world-class judges. And the judges put their, 53 from around the world, and they have to have a trained palate for whatever they're going to be judging.
Sure.
But, and while you might think, well, that's going to limit the field, they get so many judges that some are going to be left off the list.
Wow.
And here's the other gig, zero pay. These people take vacation. These are professionals from around the world, take vacation to come to Madison, Wisconsin, and be part of the judging teams for World Championship Cheese. The other part that people don't slow down and think about it, it's like World Dairy Expo. That cow in the middle of the ring at World Dairy Expo doesn't get penny one. The same with the World Cheese Champion. Whoever you are from whatever world, from however big your cheese making is, you get butt kiss, but a trophy and a rosette. But it is such a marketing bonanza. Me and John Umhafer was saying that he knows of cheesemakers who literally have had to go home and tear down their existing facility to double square foot space to acknowledge the orders they picked up right after the announcement that they were the world champion.
Wow.
It is that kind of boom, mushroom cloud in a good way over your business. And, you know, it just overwhelms for a minute. And then you realize you've not only set yourself up, but if you do it right, this is a legacy piece.
If you're just joining us, Pam Yonke is our guest. She is the fabulous farm babe, and you can hear her reports across the Civic Media Radio Network, usually at the bottom of the hour. I had heard you talking, Pam, about some of the logistics of this and getting all of the cheeses there, you know, again, from all around the world and all the hoops you have to jump through in order to make this happen. Is cheese handler a job? Because I would volunteer to be cheese handler.
I've got hands.
To bring it from, like, you know, Sweden, or, you know, I'll go to Norway and bring back cheese.
Well, the transportation folk we allow to do most of that. But you think You think you want to be the cheese handler. You think you want to stand up in Little Chute and handle this cheese. But remember now, kittens, we have got parcels of cheese from halfway around the world. And we're not talking a little something you put in your grocery basket.
Right.
We are talking about 200-pound wheels of, it's called Emmentaler. I always thought that was a unique variety. That's Swiss. They just put a an international spin on it in Switzerland.
Interesting.
So Emmentaler wheels weigh 200 pounds.
Wow.
Gruyere can come in. I believe he said that's a wheel or that's a square. Forgive me. But that's another 100, 200 pounds. And here's the funny part. Because of freight, they changed the rules or adjusted the rules for those really big packages and said, okay, fellas, ladies, if you don't want to send the whole wheel, we'll allow you to segment a piece or, you know, a quarter.
Yeah.
And they won't do it. The cheesemakers won't do it because in their eyes, it's a discredit to the craft of the whole.
Yeah.
And I think personally, do you want to be the one that decides which quarter goes?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Right.
And you miss by a point because somebody else sent the whole wheel and they just happened to sample. So I get it. I get it. When you've spent the time and energy these folks have on this kind of a craft, take the whole thing.
It's just so marvelous, though, that there is obviously so much pride involved in this that there's not, like you said, Pam, there's not a big cash award. There's not a big, and these judges are doing this for nothing and paying their own way and paying their own hotels. And
volunteers.
So that's
how many days can you be thanked with samples of cheese?
Well, Pam, I'm ready to find out, all right? I'm ready to put in the hard work, bring on the Gruyere, bring on all of the Humitashians and the...
Well, but be careful. This year, we've got a camel cheese from Australia.
I'm in.
Have you had donkey cheese?
Nope.
Really?
Water
I'm
buffalo?
In.
Have you tried all of these, Pam?
No. I mean... You can understand that it's probably a pretty, there are not a lot of camels being milked in the world, as I understand it. On my good authority.
There's just one.
So, you know,
and she's annoyed.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the cheese is probably a fairly small package. They want to make sure that they keep it for the judges, obviously.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I hadn't thought about is back to your sampling, you know, and allowing the general public to enjoy, you've got to protect. Let's say the camel cheese ends up the world champion. You got to have something on display Thursday at 2 o'clock for the world to look at.
Right. Yeah.
So they do have to be very calculating and careful on how they protect, present, and save all of the entries because you never know who's going to be the winner.
We're talking about the World Cheese Championships, which are going on in Madison over the next couple of days. And you mentioned, Pam, they actually had more volunteers than they needed this year. But I would imagine that involves everything from setting up displays and all kinds of and transporting cheese from one place to another.
God bless the people that are the slicers and dicers because they make cheese cubes for sampling. I don't know that anybody, unless you stand and look at it, can get your arms around or eyes around how many little cubes that is from a 200-pound wheel.
And
that's one.
And I've watched, I'll admit it. I've watched cheese videos on Instagram. These aren't your soft cheeses either. These are cheeses that require heavy tools to split open. So you're not just like softly just cutting it up. When you said cutting it up, my hand immediately started to hurt because I'm thinking about the hundreds, if not thousands of cubes of hard cheeses they're going to have to go through.
Yeah. Well, for sure. And, you know, back to the volunteer, one lady that I talked to was Pam Hodgson. She's a master cheesemaker in Plymouth for Sartori. And she's got master cheese certifications in 4. And she almost tears up telling the story about how proud she is to be a master cheesemaker and have this event in Wisconsin where she gets to collaborate and talk with these other cheesemakers. I mean, like I said, this is serious, serious business for these folks. From the heart all the way through. And I say you'll really see that 2 o'clock Thursday when they announce the world champion.
Stephen from Green Bay has been waiting. Thank you for joining us, Stephen. What do you want to say to Pam, the fabulous farm babe?
Hello, Pam. Nice to hear from you. When she says that this is a proud moment for cheese people, we have a cheese store called Renard's Cheese here in Sturgeon Bay, and he's a master cheesemaker, and he has cheeses that have won awards. Not only are those cheeses exponentially more expensive than the rest of the cheeses he sells, he literally puts those cheese blocks literally on a pedestal in the middle of his cheese shop. And it's the first thing you see when you walk in is this cheese that he won awards on. And it's almost like these things of cheese that me and you would put on our sandwiches. To him, they're like his little baby sitting in the middle of his story.
Absolutely.
That's great, Stephen. Thank you. I can see a little crown.
Yeah.
You know, a little wheel of cheese with a little, like, a queen of whatever one. But the one with the little crown. She had a little.
Tiara?
The old frumpy one. Anyway.
Elizabeth?
No.
Or the mom, the queen mom.
I'm getting way veered off.
Wow.
Here. All right. We're going to continue talking cheese. If you have a question for the fabulous farm babe, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
I love cheese because it is so good. I like the sharp cheddar and the not as sharp cheddar, then the extra sharp cheddar. I guess I could say I really love the cheddar cheese. I love mozzarella cheese on the pizza. Oh, it's so good, am I pleased? I love cheese, I love cheese, I love cheese. Stringy cheese, gooey cheese, oh cheese. I love the cheese sauce, cause it is made of cheese. I love Aveeda, it thinks it's made of cheese, but it's something else that's kinda like cheese. I love cheese, but not from under cheese. That's cause it's really kinda gross cheese. Oh, cow cheese, goat cheese, but no chicken cheese. Cow cheese, feta cheese. Oh.
Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. We are joined by the fabulous farm babe. You can hear her reports all across Civic Media early mornings at the bottom of the hour. Pam Yonke is with us. So good to see you, Pam. And we're talking about the World Championship Cheese Contest that is going on in Madison right now. And if you are in the area, you can stop by, like you said, Pam, from 1 to 3. Is it 1 to 3?
It's from 10 until 3.
From 10 until
3. 10 until 3 today and tomorrow. Everybody's welcome at Monona Terrace Convention Center. General public, just want to educate people, let them take it all in. And like we said, there will be sampling available.
Next year, we're totally there, Greg Bach. We're there next year. You mentioned, Pam, that there's going to be an entry this year of camel's milk from Australia. And I had to look it up. The Rendille and Gabra camels produce between 1 and 3 liters of milk a day, which our average Wisconsin cow just scoffs at that, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, hey.
What?
Be nice. You give us no milk.
That's not my job.
Oh, okay, fine.
But I would imagine that's going to be very, very expensive. When,
sure.
Right?
Anybody that's listening that's ever bought goat cheese, sheep cheese, you know, obviously it makes sense. The smaller the animal, the smaller the quantities right, they're going to have to work with. So it does make sense that there should be high value in some of those kinds of things. Or, you know, a lot of these cheeses are also going to have different flavors incorporated with them. Maybe there'll be a smear on the outside. There might be a wine that's incorporated with them. There's a lot of different elements that you will notice on a lot of different cheeses that are at Monona Terrace. And, you know, everyone's got a little different flair of taste and flair of expense.
Well, and I love the infusion of the different flavors, you know, the dill and the it's just interesting to see how creative our cheesemakers have gotten with all of these different things that they're infusing with their cheese.
I was telling you before the break, my conversation with John Umhafer, the executive director of the Wisconsin Cheesemakers, which are the overarching hosts for this event since going back to the 50s. And I said to him, okay, buddy, what are the hot cheeses this year? Meaning big in numbers, populated. And he said, no doubt, pepper cheeses, cheeses with peppers. Now, the interesting caveat to this is, okay, peachy dandy, you want habaneros, you want, now they're going ghost peppers,
of course,
reapers, as high on the spectrum of peppers as you can go. Now, that's fine. You want to put that in your cheese? Now we have to find a judge with a palate tolerable
sample
and still be able to evaluate. That is becoming a greater and greater feat. So the pepper-related cheeses are something that has been an increasing category, and smoked cheeses are making a big boom this year, too.
Oh, I love a smoked cheese.
I never thought, though, about having a judge who, as these new varieties are coming up.
Yeah.
They have to give them a rest.
Right.
They have to give them a rest, literally. I said to him, you know, if you only got two guys, and you have to keep consistency. So if you've got 15 cheeses that have to be sampled, the same two people have to evaluate all those cheeses.
Wow.
So they got to give it. It's like an athlete. Take them to the side.
You got to pace yourself, boy.
Yeah. Plus, if you're throwing in hot peppers, that's where I'm at. I can't do I can do a spicy cheese, like a nice spicy, but not a ghost pepper.
We have become obsessed with eating things that are way too hot to eat. I'm not quite sure where that trend started, but it certainly is a thing. And I have one real quick question, Pam, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but many years ago, I was interviewing someone about cheese, and who was the first guy who invented cheese? And he essentially said...
Steve Cheese.
It was Frank. You know, no. So essentially, what he told me is it was likely a mistake. Someone probably had milk in animal skins, which is how they used to transport it, and then going across a hot area... And something unexpected happened, and he's like, well, sure, I'll eat that.
Right, yeah, and most likely it is. I mean, I think, if I recall, they found remnants or telltale signs of cheese in the pyramids. Because, again, you can milk a camel,
right.
You can milk a water buffalo, you can milk a donkey. So it would make sense. It is easier to have that as a form of food that can move with you, stay with you at least for a little while.
Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to a liquid that's just going to go away. Now, remember, cheese has to have rennet with it, which is part of that, you know, brings us the curds. But it's a whole lot easier to do that than it is to try to carry fluid around in the desert.
You know, Pam, I want to say really quick. First of all, if you haven't, you guys need to listen to her show 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. every morning. I download the podcast and listen to it. I love listening to your show and everything you inform us about really have gotten me into the world of farming as well as doing this show with Jane.
Cool.
Now, Pam, when I listen to the show, my first thought is always, Pam is everywhere in Wisconsin at all times, everywhere. You're here, you're everywhere. You're never in one spot at one time. You're in Little Chute, you're in Baraboo, you're in the north, you're in the south, you're everywhere, Pam. How do you do it?
I just follow the story.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, I grew up in this. So my home farm's in O'Connell County.
Yeah.
And with this weather, I have to go home and check and see where's the water. How are we gonna, you know, how I'm like everybody else, how quick are we gonna get started? And then and like I said, if the story's in Little Chute, I got to see this.
Yeah.
I'm as bad as you. I got to see this. You know, if they said, hey, plane's going to land and the camel that made that cheese is going to be at Mitchell, I'd be there. I got to see that.
Yeah.
So, and that's where my audience is. I'm a firm believer that 90% of this job is showing up. Well, Farm Babe wants to show up.
You are
one of a kind. I am so happy that you're with us on Civic Media. I'm so happy that you've got your show, and you are welcome on this program anytime at all. The incomparable Pam Yonke, the fabulous Farm Babe. Thank you so much, Pam. We'll have to get you on in the next couple of months again.
I won't be as excited the next time. I'm almost hot.
Thank you, everyone, for calling and for listening and for texting today. It means everything. We genuinely appreciate it. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Stay with us. News is next on the Civic Media Radio Network.